da 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Seriously?
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
Hello and good evening, Mam Fam, and Mad About Movies VIPs. Kent Garrison here, coming to you live from beautiful Southern California, and joined remotely this evening by my cohorts from Texas, Richard and Brian. Hey, guys.
Hey, buddy.
Technology is a powerful thing. I'm thankful for
it.
Did you get cut today? I didn't get cut yet.
Oh, yes.
But at the rate we're going here.
Still alive.
If they knew what I did behind the scenes, I would have been cut a long time ago. Let me tell you that right now. Most of my day is spent covering my tracks and making sure
a lot of shoplifting.
Don't really find out about the candy that I steal on a regular basis from my local convenience store. No, I'm out at Cowboys training camp again. This is my annual couple of weeks away from you guys. But the convenient part about it is A, like I said, we have this technology that allows us to keep doing the show. And B, I'm about a mile away from a movie theater, so I'm going to get to see all the movies that are coming out during this time. And the show must go on, and it's actually a pretty convenient situation. Could be a lot worse. So, having said that...
But they have movie theaters in California?
They do. They're actually...
Weird.
Hey, guys, shocker. They're more expensive here than they are in Texas.
Man.
Yeah. Yep. I know it's surprising, but we're double dipping tonight. The show must go on, like I said, and lots to catch up on in the movie news, rumors, rumblings world, and in the review world. And we have a guest joining us later to talk Dunkirk, but we do have a little bit of house cleaning. This is the first episode we're recording for the normal audience. Because we have the Mam Fam, of course, but we do, like I mentioned earlier, have the Mad About Movies VIPs. And if you didn't catch our episode last time, we've started a VIP club, a Patreon VIP club, where we're going to be doing a lot of cool, fun things for those people. And we started it last week by releasing an episode on The Fifth Element, where we talked about Luc Besson's filmography and a little bit about Valerian before it came out, and of course, his quote-unquote masterwork, The Fifth Element. Actually, Leon's probably his masterwork, but The Fifth Element has been called a masterwork by some, which we did discuss in that episode. So, our Mad About Movies VIPs got access to that, and it's been really, 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 really great to see the response to the VIP club, and we got a lot of cool things in the works. We got some exclusive shirts designed for you guys, some stickers designed for you guys. And, of course, one of the things you get as a member of the Mam Fam VIP Club on Patreon is you get a shout-out on the show. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to pull up some shout-out music on the show. We're going to shout-out our lowest tier. this is a Puff Daddy, yeah. We're going to shout-out our lowest tier people. These are people that have decided that they want to support us just beyond the free downloads a week. They want to make sure the show keeps going and also want some bonus content.
So also we should say, you know, we've only been doing these throwbacks weekly for a few months. And so just to reiterate, we're going to move that channel, the throwback channel, over to the VIP, but we will still do one throwback a month on just the regular Mad About Movies feed. So you won't be total. If you can't afford the $4 a month, we get it. And you will never not have, first off, you'll have an episode a week, just like always, and you'll get a throwback a month in this feed as well.
So the throwbacks aren't going away completely. It's just that the VIP club will get more of them than the normal audience, which is, and they'll get other stuff too, movie commentaries and Q&As and chats and things like that. But that's already begun, and we really appreciate these supporters. So I'm going to run through this list really quick, and this is the inaugural class of the Mad About Movies VIP club. So we're going to shout them out. Michael Doyle, what up? Brandon Smiley, thank you. Valentino Ivazaj, thank you very much. Timothy Bevel, Shannon Duffy, hey Shannon. Jack Nivison, Jeff Pijanza, Amanda Schlachtra. I'm sure I'm butchering all these, but we're from Texas.
Send us a message on Patreon and let us know how to pronounce your name, and we'll redo it if we've screwed it up.
I'm usually very good at this, but Miles Basso, thanks. Craig Ainsworth, Megan Spell, Tyler Lowe, Alex Jankowski, TJ Meyer, Matt Hannigan, John Manasco, Joshua Souter. Joshua Souter, who has been who did our pins and has been a cool supporter. So thanks. Be on the lookout for our pins in the VIP club. AJ Williams, Chantel Oloju, Matt Fry, Abigail Miller, Andy Armstrong, Elliot Max, Jacob Paul Dial, Garrett Elliott, which I think is Jason Garrett and Ezekiel Elliott's weird twin something spawn. Olivia Robinson, Mick Mattson, Matthew Brophy, somebody who's just named H, which is awesome. Apparently a member of the Men in Black or something. Justin Cutsinger, Scott Peterson.
A lot of downtime in the Men in Black. You know,
yeah,
you got to fill that with something.
It's just, it's weird. The email address is just h@gmail.com. Like, how did you get that? No.
Great.
It's so cool. All right. Just a few more. Amy Carter. Thank you, Amy. Jeremiah Baker. Chris Townsend. Adam Haar. And Bill Patrick. Those are inaugural VIP patrons.
I'm not sure if you said Scott Peterson.
I did.
I think I might have talked over you, so make sure you hear that. And then we had one in here that you did say to Matt Fry, but I want to take that one back. You're not thanked. We do not thank you, Matt Fry. So I just want to be clear there.
Okay. So that is the inaugural class, and we have other classes as well, but we don't have time to shout everybody out tonight. Next week
you'll get your day. Yeah, you'll get your day.
Yeah, next week we will shout out the members of the Eye and see how many members we've got. Almost 15 to 20 members of the Eye, the official Eye Club, and that's the special patrons, and they get more than everybody, of course, but the $12 range too. That's pretty much the VIP Club. Thank you so much, and be on the lookout for extra awesome content on there. Patreon.com/madaboutmovies, or hit up our website. The link is right there. So. Having said that, movie news, rumors, rumbling time. And Brian, I guess you want to bring us this movie news. I had no idea about this. You guys filled me in before the show. Things are happening, believe it or not, while I'm out here. So Brian, I guess some movie news broke over the week that I had no idea about. You guys filled me in on it. And I guess it's somewhat big news for a certain group, a dedicated group. I guess let's talk about it. What do we got?
So we know when the next James Bond movie is headed our way, and that will be November of 2019. And it seems like about 99% sure that Daniel Craig is going to come back. So I'm looking right now on the old Google, which is a website that I use to find information. I don't know if you guys have ever tried it out before.
No. Where do you find it?
You go to Bing.com first and type in Google.
Okay, so you bang it.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah, so to make sure you get to that. The old Google is seems to be confused on will he or won't he return. So it looks like there hasn't been an official word, but it may be one of those, it seems to be one of those like worst kept secret kind of things. So I think it's pretty safe to say Daniel Craig's coming back for another round of Bond, and we'll get to see him in action once again in November 2019.
This is his fifth one, correct?
Uh-huh, yeah. So this is the good one.
Yeah, I was going to say the odd number ones have been good, very good.
Yeah.
The evens being Quantum of Solace and Spectre have not. So I'm quietly optimistic.
Yeah, I am too. Question, I guess, remains, maybe is Sam Mendes back on board? Is Roger Deakins back on board for this one? Or is it going to be a new director, new spin on it, something like that? Do we know anything like that?
Louis Leterrier, and it's literally a new spin. Mm-hmm. Literally a new spin.
I haven't seen anything on director. I don't think it's going to be Mendes. So could be wrong, but we'll see. Spectre is such a weird thing because it seemed like Craig and Mendes both were so mailing it in on all fronts.
So that, boring, man.
Yeah.
It's,
and that,
it's not
that's,
even bad. I mean,
right,
it's bad.
Right.
But it's not like it takes a lot of swings and it just fails. It just like doesn't, nothing happens. Just
yeah.
So...
I think, yes, you're totally right, Richard. Like when I saw this news come across, I was trying to even think of what the title of the of that movie was. You know, I had to, and I mean,
Quantum of Solace. I don't think I've seen Quantum of Solace to this day.
Quantum of Solace is not particularly
Spectre
good, but
always
slips
my mind
happens.
Too.
Yeah, Spectre. Yeah. I literally had to IMDb it to try to figure out what the title was, and I was like, that really wasn't that long ago. And this is what we do is just do stupid movie stuff, and I couldn't even think. So I think that shows like how little impact that the movie made. So I like Daniel Craig as Bond. I would love to have him back, but I want him checked in. I don't want him, you know, just half mailing the whole thing in the whole time. So we'll see. But well, I think it's exciting. I think it's good news, but we need full effort.
Well, from the rumor central, the target for this to direct is Paul McGuigan, who did Sherlock, the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
That so that's who they're trying to court to do this. I think that'd be cool. Maybe add a little more intelligentsia to James Bond, which they've done over the past couple ones. You know, it's mm-hmm. very low on the gadgetry and very high on his swagger, you know, on him getting himself through things. Yeah, I definitely think in hindsight, and we did do an episode on Spectre and Skyfall, if you would like to go back and revisit those. But yeah, I don't think I've thought about Spectre once since it came out. And the whole, when they tried to keep Christoph Waltz a secret, on his true identity a secret, that kind of fell flat too. Everyone saw that coming. It was like, speaking of Cumberbatch, it was like the his character in Into Darkness. You know, you weren't fooling anybody with this. We know what we're getting coming in. It was kind of a swing and a miss, and people got kind of down on Bond, and then rumors started swirling that Daniel Craig wouldn't return. I'm excited that he's returning. I think he's solid as Bond. I think he's as solid as a Bond as you would want, you know? I'm interested in the shakeup. I'm interested, though, like everybody, on who they're going to get next, because there is going to be a next James Bond. I want Tom Hardy. I think Tom Hardy would be an awesome James Bond. He wouldn't be audible, but he would be really good at it. He would have a mask over his face, you know, but I think he would be really good. I like Ben Whishaw a lot. If they kind of, you know, I don't know, pass the torch and Q became the next Bond or something, I think that would be a cool little twist. And, of course, Idris Elba's name comes up all the time. I'm not opposed to that. I think they really could work in some kind of James Bond as a code name, you know, for an agent, and it's not really their true identity. I think they could do something like that and really get away with anything. And Daniel Craig has kind of proven that you don't really have to fit the mold of the tall, dark, handsome guy to be James Bond. You can be different than that. It's not necessarily a role that only one type of actor or one certain look can occupy. So I'm excited about that. And man, you guys are going to love him in Logan Lucky later this year, later in August.
He
steals the movie, and you're like, man, this guy, it changed the way I perceive Daniel Craig. It really did. And maybe that's why, maybe the Bond people saw that movie and they're like, man, we need to sign this guy now, because he's about to, you know, people are about to be calling him after the, I consider Bond obviously a breakout role, but Logan Lucky is unlike anything he's ever done. And we're really going to enjoy that. But I guess it would be more news if, you know, somebody else was Bond besides Daniel Craig, but it's good to have him back nonetheless.
Sure. Yeah.
So I guess who's going to be the Bond girl? I mean, Denise Richards, Christmas Jones makes a return before, or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Cara Delevingne actually signed on.
I'm out.
I'm automatically out. By the way, we didn't talk about Valerian.
Next week, let's do it.
Oh, we have to do that. There's nothing out this weekend. Pretty sure we could find something. Let's push the big six next week and just take this rest of the night off. But I'm not opposed to that at all. But yeah, Valerian, I guess, as expected, didn't make the splash. Shocking. It should have in the United States.
Very surprising.
I'm sure it'll be fine because, again, he is the Spielberg of France, or claims to be.
No, it's not that many. I mean, it's a 200 and something million dollar budget. Gosh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And he said, I read a very interesting interview with Luc Besson that I quoted a couple of his quotes and sent them to you guys because of how up his own butt Luc Besson is. He's like, oh, yeah, well, we've already sold 95% of the budget back in pre-sales. I was like, no, you didn't. Yeah. No, you didn't. Yeah. You did not do $195 million in pre-sales or whatever. That's just untrue. And he's like, yeah, people criticize me when I cast Cara Delevingne because they're like, man, she can't act. But I showed him with Valerian. Like, did you? Did you really show us that she's a star? I don't know. I like Dane DeHaan a lot. I think he has a future in a certain kind of film. I think if he took the Paul Dano route, he would be a very successful actor. But remains to be seen what his career goes. But yeah, Valerian, not the hit that nobody anticipated. Well, shout out to the VIPs. Exciting news about Bond. And Bond's really a character that I haven't gotten tired of. Every time I think I get tired of it, a good James Bond movie comes out, and they kind of reinvent the wheel every single time. And, man, I just don't know how you can be better than Skyfall as far as what I'm looking for in a Bond movie. Right. You know, extremely well shot and creative and good performances in directing and a villain that's intriguing. I think that one hit the home run for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're, I guess they're trying to top at this point. Okay, good times. Let's take a quick break for a swig of water and welcome in our guest and talk Dunkirk. Hey, what's up, ma'am, fam? Kent here. And yes, if you're hearing from me, you know it's time to talk about Blue Apron. If you haven't tried out Blue Apron by now, what the heck are you even doing? Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. They deliver fresh meals straight to your door. All the food is fresh, it's sourced from local farms, and there's no wasted ingredients. I've been a Blue Apron subscriber for a long time now, and they have still, to this day, never let me down. There's tons of variety. Some featured upcoming meals include summer vegetable and egg paninis, soy-glazed pork and rice cakes, skillet vegetable chili with cheddar drop biscuits, holy crap, and garlic butter shrimp and corn with green bean salad. So take it from me. Try out Blue Apron now. Go to blueapron.com/mad. That's blueapron.com/mad. Get three meals on us for free. Nothing goes better with a movie than dinner. So check out Blue Apron, blueapron.com/mad. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Hey, ma'am, fam, question for you. Do you own a small business or are you a boss? Are you looking to hire awesome people, but you just can't find somebody to fill that role? Well, let me tell you about ZipRecruiter.com. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites all with one click. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. Right now, you can post your jobs for free on ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/mad. That's ZipRecruiter.com/mad. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/mad. Thanks to ZipRecruiter for supporting this episode of the Mad About Movies podcast. We are joined by a guest right now who has been an awesome supporter of the show and has been interactive on social media and email and always has great thoughts. And I think is a member of the Mad About Movies VIP Club. Is that correct?
Oh, gosh. Well, what Not an introduction yet. And what a big letdown. Yeah, I have been so busy.
It's okay.
That's kind of the, you know, story of my life right there. But no, I have not had a chance yet. So, gosh, I hate to say that, but then again, I'm on the show, so I guess it makes
sense. She's kind of like a pre-VIP, right?
Yeah,
like she got in ahead of the curve. Yeah.
She's like on that. The list. She doesn't have to wait in line.
Even if I doctored the list myself while y'all weren't looking, it's really okay. No,
there's a big
so
Samoan
much.
Guy with a clipboard and her name's on it.
Exactly. He's a buddy of mine, so we're good.
So we are joined by Hannah Roberts on the show. Round of applause. Welcome, Hannah, to
Thanks.
The show.
Thanks so
much. It's been a long time coming now. And if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, which I assume you have, if you're being our guest, you're going to be put through the ringer here with two hard-hitting brain busters. Ready?
Oh, gosh, okay. I'm ready.
Go. Question number one. Have you seen MacGruber?
You know what? I have not, and I feel
like
great.
It's been great, and we'll have you on some other time. Just let us know when you've done that. And
okay, no, so here's the story: is I remember the SNL skits from years ago, like the OG MacGruber skits. Like he hasn't checked his stocks in months, the whole nine yards. I loved those skits, and I've never been able to find. Get my hands on a copy of the movie. So yeah, still working on that one, but I've seen clips from it and oh my gosh, like, yeah, hilarious. I need to watch. Yeah.
We can point you in the right direction on how to watch MacGruber. But question number two, have you seen Now You See Me?
I have. My neck tattoo looks great. Jaden, it looks so good in Gothic font. I just couldn't pass it up, y'all. So, I'm very dedicated fan. You could call me a fangirl if you would. I have seen the movie. How many words for abomination are there in the dictionary? I don't actually know.
I think we've used all of them though. Yeah, we've used everyone.
We could take the time for the podcast. Just, you know, putting that through the ringer and I'd be okay with that.
Hey, we can do that.
Travesty. Yeah. I mean, hey, let's do it. Mad About Now You See Me.
Pretty much. It's pretty much what the show is anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. But, which is okay. I mean, I'm cool with that. Y'all have given everybody really a good idea of what the movie's like if they haven't seen it. But yes, unfortunately I have. And I loved y'all's, you had the commentary, you know, you guys put out a while ago. Oh, yeah. That was a fun.
Forgot we did a commentary on that too. Man, yeah, that's right. We spent way too much time on this over the years.
I cannot wait. Yeah.
Wow. Heavily edited.
I think
right.
so.
Oh
yeah.
Gosh, the real version was far too explicit. Right.
Yeah. It was. It was just me screaming into a mic. It was inaudible. It was. Right. It wasn't really a podcast as much as just a sound of me. Screaming.
Like performance art, basically.
Right. Interpretive performance art, right.
That's exactly, yeah, exactly.
People come okay. around and throw money at him.
Well, this is a big...
I was trying to through the phone. It didn't work.
This is a big night on the show. You picked a really, really good week to be here. Because for me, and I know for Brian, and I'm not sure about Richard, this is one of my most anticipated movies of the year, if not the summer. And had this one circled forever.
Mr. Valerian.
Or Valerian. Emojis for me, but that's
true.
Still got to get to that in a bonus episode. Anyway, maybe I'll do that.
You just want to see if your tattoo made it into the film.
Yeah, right. my poo tattoo.
And I assume you're talking about, you know, Girls Trip, right? That's the one I had signed up for.
Yeah,
man, that crushed though. That killed it. That would have been a good summer movie draft sleeper. If we went like nine rounds deep, that would have been.
I didn't even know what it was until I saw a poster. I was like, oh boy, okay. Why didn't I choose that? Yeah, no.
I've seen that trailer probably 30 times this year in various screenings, and it got a great response every single time. And when I went to the theater to go see Dunkirk, like everybody ahead of me in line was going to see Girls Trip. So it definitely had an audience and did very well.
And critically, it's like low 90s on
Is Rotten it really?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Like 88%, something like
that. Unexpected. Like, unexpected.
Yeah.
Like original comedies doing well. That's never a bad thing. So expect a Christmas version of that to come out very soon. It's like Bad Mom's Christmas. Is Bad Mom's Christmas the most necessary movie of the year? I think so. It just says the most, you know. Probably about Saint Nick. Okay. All right. So Dunkirk. This is a big one, like I said, for me. But man, this was an experience to watch, and I'm just really, really blown away at Christopher Nolan. This is a guy who has done everything you can do as a director. I mean, he's broken box office records. He reinvented one of the most iconic characters of all time in Batman. He did a very ambitious sci-fi project, not sci-fi, but I guess space movie with Interstellar. And he definitely has one of the more intellectually successful movies of all time with Inception, and one of the more, some of the most complex movies of all time with Memento. I mean, this guy and The Prestige, and I can go on and on about his filmography. But this is a whole new level. And
he did an Air Bud, too. I don't remember which one.
I think that was actually, you're wrong. It was Most Valuable Primate. It was actually the monkey version of Air Bud.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was close.
That's underrated. I mean, you could see it. The way the timelines all come together at the end and everything is classic Nolan.
It is. It's the way he worked the linear storylines and mixed that up. It's just genius. Yeah. But this...
Zimmer using the buzzer as a part of his score is just
that's impressive.
That was a classic as well. I know.
This was extremely, like I said, an extreme experience for me, but extremely eye-opening in a lot of areas. And it really is just, it's an extremely simple film, the way it's shot and the way they go about it. It's a very traditional war film in its style, but in its structure, it's very untraditional. So I really appreciated that and the way he kind of mixed up the different perspectives and the different timelines and how you don't see things necessarily in chronological order. You do, but from different perspectives, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And it always had me guessing on the true end of the movie, which is, who's going to survive, right? Which of these characters are going to survive? How does this battle end? You know, what happens? I was very unfamiliar with the Dunkirk story before this. Apparently it's a very big story in the UK, and they learn about it like we learn about, you know, Gettysburg or something like that in the US.
And, Grenada.
And the Alamo in Texas. But I was just blown away by this movie, the scale of it. The execution was great. And like I said, it's just old school, badass filmmaking to a T. And this is already a modern day classic. Like, this feels like a movie that's 40 years old that has aged perfectly. You know, it just has that timeless feel to it already. And I love this movie. I'm excited to talk about it. So, Hannah, you get the first word here.
Oh, cool. So, well, I mean, you said it all pretty much just there, but honestly, I struggle to figure out where to begin with this this film, just in general thoughts. But I'll start by saying out by that the first word that came to my mind was masterpiece. I mean, truly, Nolan is such an incredible storyteller, and this is a giant story to tell about humanity. And for this to be Nolan's first stab at a historical event, just utterly spectacular and so unique. I don't think anyone else could have made this film but Nolan, you know. The way the whole thing unfolds is quite literally breathtaking. I mean, it really, I was sitting in the theater just like, my mind was blown. It's nonstop. It didn't slow down, and you're on the edge of your seat and you stay there, you know. So realistic and so emotional, and it was very thought provoking, and you just leave thinking about it. I couldn't get it out of my head when I left the theater. And it's artistic and intricate, and that, yeah, it makes it totally, totally unique. And as the viewer, you're just transported to whatever is happening. And it's such a powerful and, you know, really visceral way, that I was blown away, utterly blown away watching this film. And I don't think that it's an exaggeration to say that it will continue to stun me time after time, you know, view after view, and it just knocked me off my feet. So such a grand scale to deal with here. And for me, it was just remarkable to experience. What a piece of art.
I agree. Brian or Richard, want to hop in here?
Yeah, look, Nolan's my... probably second favorite director going right now behind Spielberg. And, you know, Spielberg occupies that space as much for tradition and history as he does, more so for tradition and history than he does for, you know, his current filmmaking. You guys both kind of touched on it. There's really no one like Christopher Nolan. I love pretty much every one of his films. Insomnia is the only one that I'm not super enthusiastic about, but everything else he does, I think there's stuff you can point out as far as flaws with this movie, as with most of his other films. But I just feel like everything, I don't know. I just respect so much the way he approaches every film and the time and effort that he puts into like creating the most ambitious version of that film. Like you said, Hannah, you didn't think anyone else could direct this film. And I think you're totally right. Like there's plenty of people who could do a movie about Dunkirk, and I'm surprised that it hasn't been done up to this point, but there's nobody out there, I don't think, at least making mainstream films that could do this version of Dunkirk, right?
Totally.
Like they could do this wild kind of this nonlinear storytelling and the way it all comes together. I would not trust that into the hands of pretty much any other guy out there. He's so talented. And I think his penchant for making things more complex than maybe they need to be, or maybe you think they need to be at least. I think that causes problems for some people. It doesn't for me. I love it. I love that he's out there trying to do something different and that he's got a vision that he's going to bring to the screen. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about his films is his ability to tell complex stories without becoming convoluted and overly complicated and whatnot. And I love that. I love that he can, this is a less complex film than like Inception or something, but to take three storylines and blend them together, three historical storylines and blend them together like this, I think that could have gotten away from just about any other director really fast. And so I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. I've said before the 5 minute preview that we saw of, or the 5 minute clip of Dunkirk saw in Rogue One, the best. That was better than anything in Rogue One. And I mean, that was my favorite part of that movie, and I liked Rogue One just fine. It's something different. And I just like, you know, when we talked about Baby Driver a few weeks ago, I love stupid action movies and comedies and all that sort of stuff, and I'm all for them. But I love leaving a theater when I've seen a movie done by a true, like, real filmmaker. Like Christopher Nolan, like Edgar Wright, like Quentin Tarantino, any of these, you know, the top of the top, because you just feel, I don't know, I left feeling like the story itself is, there's a lot to wrestle with, and I'm trying to, you know, deal with the emotions of that you go through whenever you watch a war movie or something like that. But just from a gosh, I love movies kind of guy, I'm just so pumped up walking out of this film and just amazed at his ability to bring things together and put that on the screen. So I'm high on this. I really liked it a lot. I'm with you guys. I think it's a testament to Nolan's filmography that I'm not walking out saying, man, that's the best movie he's ever done, because it's really hard to compare. It's really hard to pick between all of the films that he's put out thus far. So but man, it's great, and I'm looking forward to getting deeper into it. Richard, sorry I took the mic forever. What about you, man? How do you feel?
It was all right. No. No, it's you know, it's someone in Nolan that takes big, interesting artistic risks in a popcorn setting. It's really kind of like maybe the only director right now that, I mean, maybe, yeah, I guess Edgar Wright too, but a few others that are making sort of like really passion projects, really not compromising on a vision, and still doing it in a scale of the blockbuster film, which, while we have kind of a, and I get why the economics are this way, but while we kind of have an epidemic of sort of brainless summer entertainment, we equally have kind of a, you know, small pretentious film epidemic going on the other side. And rarely do those worlds merge, where it's something interesting and insightful and, you know, kind of soulful and smart and all of these things. And it's done with like a $200 million budget or whatever. And that's always like, that's the best, because they don't really make those movies anymore. And to see a movie that's very much for an adult audience, not because it's overtly violent, it's not really, I mean, aside from violence of war, not because it has sort of any sort of content issues, but it's a movie meant for the adult brain to be processed by an adult brain. for that big a budget is rare. And like, you know, I enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy and I enjoy things, but it's a certain part of my childish brain probably that enjoys them. And it's nice to like walk out and kind of feel the tingling of the neurons in your scalp that you like thought through something and had an interesting experience and felt unique tension and experienced kind of interesting music. And felt like, man, that was just cool too. Like I just ate popcorn and enjoyed it. And so that's such a fun, really invigorating experience, especially when it's like us three and you two, Hannah, who see a lot of movies and you get jaded and you get, I mean, I don't like anything anymore. Even things I like, I don't really make me excited because it's even things that are done well. What does it mean that was done well? Well, it followed this formula that that we've decided aesthetically is the correct formula for that type of film, whether it's pop culture, a blockbuster, or you know, an Oscar film. But there is a certain template for both of those things, and when things fit in that template, you say, and it's probably lazy criticism on our part, "Oh, that was good," right? Because that was that executed within that template well. But when something like this comes out, it's like a new template. And it's a template not rarely used. And so when you see a lot of movies like we do, you think, oh, wow, that was different. That was an exciting, I got to kind of be like I hadn't been in the movies in a year again. And so it's hard to really rate this well. I will give it a good grade because it's very good, but it's almost hard to because you're so, such an invigorating experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It blew me away right from the beginning. I mean, there's no opening credits at all, you know, in the movie. I think there's a black screen that says Dunkirk, and then it goes straight into the movie. You're right in it, and I think it reminded me of War of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes that we talked about a couple weeks ago. In fact, I counted no dialogue for like the first 10 minutes of the film. Bombs falling, this huge battle, this ambush happens, and I think the first dialogue that we get is somebody says, "Where's the bloody Air Force?" You know, and that like sets the tone for the entire movie. I really liked how they had, I mean, you could have made a movie off one of the three main storylines, right? Like the soldiers in Dunkirk, like the actual infantrymen of Dunkirk. The Air Force, the Tom Hardy aspect of it, and then the boat aspect, right? The kind of citizens' rescue of the movie, and it, you know, each of those was extremely interesting and had, you know, several layers to them by themselves. But I think combined, like you said, like when you take a traditional war film and flip it on its head, that's innovation. You know, that's when you take, like you said, that's when you break the mold, Richard, is where, you know, he could have come out here and just done a total chronological, here's the Battle of Dunkirk, and probably done a very good job. But I really respect Nolan for not going about it that way and for doing his own vision for it and for adding, you know, giving us a different way to tell the story or telling the story in a different way, I should say.
It's like a breath of fresh air, you know?
Exactly. This could have been a by-the-books war film and still probably would have gotten a recommend from me if it had been, you know, executed as well as something like a Black Hawk Down or something like that. Just you know, a very solid war movie. But this, it was different than that. It was way different. I didn't notice a lot of Steadicam in the movie. You know, Saving Private Ryan is very well known for being totally, you know, the shoulder cam the entire time. You're right in the action. You know, the camera doesn't hesitate to shake around when there's an explosion. It really wants to make you feel like you're in the battle from that first-person perspective. That's really the only way Spielberg and his cinematographer, Janusz Kamiński, could tell that story accurately was to be in D-Day. You know, you're in the water with Tom Hanks. You're behind the barricades when they're getting shot at, and it really does give you a great sense. But, you know, Nolan didn't stick to any type of formula that way. He didn't stick to the shoulder cam. He didn't stick to the steady cam. He, you know, like Stanley Kubrick did in Full Metal Jacket, which I still think, you know, we talked about Full Metal Jacket in a throwback episode. Still think it's a little too polished for a war movie and its cinematography and everything. It does have that kind of very meticulous Stanley Kubrick feel to it. This didn't. This had the shoulder cam at times. It had the dolly shots at times. It had the amazing aerial photography that Christopher Nolan is known for. I mean, just some gorgeous shots.
It was unreal.
Outside of the actual effects of the explosions and guns and the actual scale of how many troops that they got to shoot this movie and everything, it's just beautifully shot, and it's a masterpiece artistically. You know, you could watch this movie on mute and think it was you could put this in a museum frame by frame if you wanted to, and I would not argue with you. I mean, it looks that good, which leads us to a conversation surrounding the film, which this was shot, you know, traditionally in IMAX a lot of the time. This was shot in a very large scale format. I didn't get to see this in a large scale. I saw this in a standard movie theater. This, not even the XD or whatever they call it, you know, the large format screen. It was just the standard widescreen, and I still thought it looked great and had as much scale as I could have imagined. But like you said, Brian, we did see the IMAX 5-minute scene that they showed before Rogue One, and I was blown away at the IMAX stuff. Did any of you guys get to see it in a large format?
I went to it like the XD theater. I couldn't make it out to the full IMAX 70 millimeter. Like the closest one was 30 miles away, and I just couldn't get it done. But I'm hoping next week I'll have time to go and do that, because I've heard from everybody basically it's a different movie in that format. Yeah. So I got the closest thing that I could get this time around, and it worked pretty well. But I am dying to see it in that theater we saw Rogue One in too.
I am too. Hannah, did you see it in a normal theater, normal setting?
I did one viewing, and I also saw it in IMAX. So
nice.
Yeah, it was a good weekend for me. I did, and I really wanted to, because I you know, you hear about how it's shot, and when Christopher Nolan tells you to go see it in IMAX, you go see it in IMAX. So I did do that, but I saw it regular format at first. You know, it wasn't, or in a regular theater, I should say. But it was still incredible. I mean, there's the IMAX also added a lot to the sound. This movie is filled with sound, and so that did add a little bit of an extra element, you know, stacked on top of the large format. That's both amazing. I mean, I'd like to see it in IMAX again, you know, but that doesn't really necessarily make or break the movie.
Yeah.
I saw it in IMAX. Deal with it, Brian.
Nice.
Yes, Richard, team IMAX.
I'm going to see it in IMAX. If it's still out in IMAX when I'm able to see it, I will definitely do that. It just didn't work with my schedule, but
no, I'm having to close it early before you get back in town. It cost me quite a bit.
That's what I hate about IMAX is that, you know, you can only see it for like 2 weeks before freaking Valerian, you know, or whatever has to take. Oh, sorry, we've reserved the IMAX. You know, something that's just ridiculous. You know, what was it a few years ago? Like Grown Ups 2 was in like, I'm not kidding. It was a Sandler movie that was in the large format screen at my theater. And they had, they took out Gravity for it, I think. I was like, why would you remove Gravity from this theater and put in a comedy? Who sees comedies in large format, first of all?
Golly, that must have just been a joke on the entire, you know.
I think so. You're just wasting money at that point, but that's frustrating. Geez. But Hannah, you mentioned the sound. I was absolutely blown away by the sound. This will get, you know, multiple sound nominations, I would think, for sound editing, sound mixing. I cannot wait to see what it does from the technical side when the awards come around, but man, I got to give it to Hans Zimmer here, because this soundtrack was great. Did you notice the ticking in the soundtrack? Like,
and
didn't
that was
stop
actually
for the
Christopher
entire movie.
Nolan's watch, was because it? I'm a massive Zimmer fan. I have two musicians for parents, and I grew up in a very musical family. And film scores are pretty much my life. I mean, I love, you know, getting into it and really listening, and I have not been able to turn it off. Like I'd like to think that I listen to other music since I saw Dunkirk, and honestly, like, it's been hard because the score, it makes everything intense, you know, driving to work and getting gas in your car and stuff. But no, but actually, what I had heard was that I mean, Hans Zimmer, and sorry to you know, steal mm-hmm. this little portion here, but that was something I actually really wanted to talk about, was the score, because it was made next level. I mean, this film is obviously incredible, but I think the score truly made it next level. It would be a different film without any of the key components, but the music to me is like the backbone of the film. It adds mm-hmm. that layer yeah. of stress and anxiety, and it's very subconscious for people that aren't necessarily, you know, into music. But apparently, I mean, Zimmer and Nolan have such a amazingly symbiotic relationship anyway, but I always love seeing them work together, what they could do. But I heard that actually Nolan's watch was the ticking, like that was his actual wow. personal watch.
That's awesome.
So I mean, that's yeah, that just takes it even up a notch, you know, or whatever. But yeah. But yeah, incredible.
Yeah, you notice the ticking a little bit, but it just mm-hmm. seeps into your subconscious in the movie to where it doesn't stick out, but it adds such an element of urgency to the sound, and it really does make you feel like they got to yeah. get this thing done now, because something's about to happen, you know. Like there really is a ticking clock. Mm-hmm. It's such a genius move. I mean,
yeah,
I don't even know if I would have noticed the score. I'm sure I would have if it's Hans Zimmer, but it just made it stuck out immediately. And there's a very big moment at the end where the ticking stops, and it's mm-hmm. very purposeful, yeah. and it's just a genius narrative move by all involved. Yeah. But Brian, what were you going
to
yeah. say?
No, and you guys are right. It's so, you know, I notice it because I don't pay attention to scores the way you do, Kent, and you do as well, Hannah. So, for me, you know, I catch it early, and then it's such a constant that you kind of forget about it, which is perfect. That's how it should be. It should be driving you subconsciously, because mm-hmm. then when it ends, you know, right towards the end of the film, when that cuts out, you have this moment of, it's both a moment of realization of like, oh right, that's been happening the whole time, and yeah. you kind of involuntarily like breathe out and have this like sigh of relief almost,
right?
Like
it's all like over. Okay, I can. Yeah,
stress is gone. Like that's an incredible trick, you know.
It's, yeah, it's a really never good seen thing. That before. That was just, yeah, that was really incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, we haven't even started to talk about who's in this movie, or, you know, we've talked 30 minutes about this film already, and there's so much so much to talk about. Some of the big set pieces just blew my mind. The bombs falling. There's one scene where a guy's laying on the beach, and the bombs, you know, there's this air raid, and the bombs are falling, and they're just coming straight towards him. You know, you see him in succession blowing up on the beach, and, you know, everybody in that scenario is just ducking for cover, you know, and you just got to hope as a soldier that a bomb doesn't land straight on you, you know, because that's all you can do is get down and cover your head, you know. And the destruction in this is stunning. It really does put in perspective kind of, you know, what these ground troops go through when there's, you know, you're in this kind of Air Force battle to a certain degree, but you still have a war to fight. So that stuff blew my mind, just kind of the juxtaposition between the air and the ground, and how they, you know, cut from the air to Tom Hardy, to his situation, back to the ground, and how they kind of seamlessly work that together. Christopher Nolan uses the fuel gauge brilliantly here, to where, you know, Tom Hardy thinks his fuel gauge is faulty or whatever, and you don't ever know if it is, but you know that he could eventually run out of fuel, and he's keeping track of it throughout the film. And again, another sense of urgency created there with the fuel gauge and that stuff. The sequence that really struck me was the medic guys trying to take the guy out on the stretcher, you know, and you're just following them through this battle as they're trying to get to the medical boat before it leaves. And they're at this stretcher, and there's, you know, they're getting ambushed or, you know, bombed while this is all going on. And it was just a stunning sequence there. Mm-hmm. What stuck out to you?
It's broken, though. That...
What?
Yeah, the gauge is broken. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Well, he says, didn't he say something like, it must be broken then, or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he kind of hints that he's like, I think it's broken, then yeah. I think... It's implied anyway.
I think he says it. He says something like, I hope it's broken, or something like that. Like, I hope I really don't have this little of fuel, because I'm about to be down.
Right.
Like, obviously, you know, yeah. He lasts a little bit longer than that, but I just thought that was genius.
Yeah, that was really cool.
How you never knew when he could go down at any second, you know, and it was definitely a concern for me. His fuel. Every time they cut back to him, I was like, he could crash right now. How far is he going to make it? That was my biggest question in this movie, is how far is he going to make it? And I think the way it ends is appropriate, but I just love that move. Anything else? What are the big sequences do you have? I've got two more written down here, but I want to give you guys a chance to kind of jump in here with something that impressed you with this.
I thought the dogfights were really cool because we haven't seen, I feel like we haven't seen dogfights in a movie in a really long time, at least done well. Those were great.
I've got some DVDs I can give you of just dogfights. It's a weird thing.
Right. Yeah. Got some, is that Michael? Anyway.
Hey, I'm from Atlanta. Be careful. Be careful. Yeah.
I thought those were done so well. And we just don't really see that kind of thing in film. But to me, the sequence or the part of the film that I was the most into was the stuff on the sea, the stuff with Mark Rylance and his son and those, and the way that those played out and, the way, you know, that they built, you don't have to really build tension there because you know exactly, I think that one is very clear up front. Like, you know, that these people are civilians and they are going into the worst of the worst sort of scenario.
You're thrown right into it with them too, you know.
Yeah, there's no buildup, which I love. I love that. But those sequences, they're certainly not they're probably not the most actiony of or the most war movie of them, but they were the most, for me, they were the most dramatic sequences.
Man, the dogfights, I loved how it wasn't pretty. You know, it really showed, it wasn't Top Gun where they're just flying around, they're just knocking planes out of the air. It really showed how difficult it was to fly those planes and to actually knock another plane out of the sky. It wasn't polished at all. It's just the most realistic view I think we've had up to this point of what that was like. This wasn't, I don't know, what was that, Red Tails or whatever, you know, something like that. Yeah. This was this felt like archive footage, to be honest, you know, we're doing here.
I was thinking the same thing. It's amazing. It was really surreal for me to see actors portraying, because I mean, I'm a massive Tom Hardy fan. Anybody that knows me knows that. But seeing him play, you know, this pilot and he's acting with his eyes, you know what I mean? Like you barely see his face. It looks so real. Like I had a hard time just being like, okay, no, this is a movie. Like he's not actually a pilot. This is a film, because it seemed so real to me, you know?
Yeah. Christopher Nolan just can't resist covering his mouth. Can he? I just want to see Tom Hardy act in a Christopher Nolan movie without his mouth obscured or by that.
In Mad
Inception.
Max, too.
I mean, it's Inception, he's got the cool.
Yeah,
that's true
for
a little bit. He wasn't Tom Hardy then, though, like he is now. He's Tom freaking Hardy. That stuff, like I said, they could have made a freaking movie of just that, of just Tom Hardy and all that. But yeah. I think the stuff on the ground really brings it home. And again, the Mark Rylance stuff adds definitely the emotion that you would want, and the citizen's kind of perspective on this whole thing. And that was really good. Another very strong sequence is the grounded boat, where all the soldiers get in the grounded boat and they're waiting for the tide to come in to escape. That was crazy. And when they're all getting shot at, when they're trying to plug the holes in the ship and they're getting shot
at. So much anxiety.
Holy crap, man. Like, are they going to drown or get shot? I don't know what's going to happen here, but both the outcomes can't be good. I mean, that was just, wow. Some other stuff, I guess, when a couple of the planes actually crash into the ocean. I mean, did they really freaking crash planes into the ocean? Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, well, it looks pretty accurate.
They used almost no CG in this film, so
and to do it I mean, they do it multiple times. They had to, because they shoot it from different perspectives, you know? You see the plane crash from the sea. You're like, oh, I guess a plane crashed. But then later on in the film, you actually are sitting in the pilot's chair, or you're Tom Hardy, and you're looking at the other plane as it's going down. So I just loved how they worked out. They kind of they'll show you something that happened, and then another scene would happen, and they'll go back and show you, oh, here's what actually happened. Here's the circumstances behind that, and here's the context behind that. What happened? The way they transition from scene to scene was seamless, very seamless. The guys actually, you know, crash in the oil, and then the oil sets on fire in the ocean, and there's this huge fire. I mean, you don't think about that stuff either. We think about war as just like guys burning alive because they're in an ocean that has oil in it, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, the blind guy with the sun and everything. Tough. Ooh, man.
Yeah, it's hard stuff.
Tugged at the heartstrings. For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
And that stuff all worked flawlessly, too. I mean, I'm trying to think of a I haven't made a complaint. This is very rare for me to get this far into a review without saying anything negative, but I can't.
It was a file scene. When Tom Hardy's bringing that plane down, and then he quickly opens up a file cabinet in the cockpit.
When
and it's like,
just has to throw him into his briefcase real fast. Like,
And he pulls up a file. He's like, yep, Dunkirk.
He's like,
it's just like some bullet facts about the city.
It's just that away and every that person that died. It's, yeah.
It's even weirder, though, because his Rolodex is broken. And so he can't, you know, can't call anybody.
Did you see the file scene I made for you this week?
I did not. What was that about?
Oh, you missed it. Text. I made you scroll through our text feed tonight, and I made you a file scene.
Oh, God.
I'll send it again.
Love file scenes. Everyone knows me, knows that I love those.
This is on our Twitter, actually, maybe.
I was a little, I mean, I could take that back. I was a little pissed when Tom Hardy's plane is crashing and he's just cursing Galileo the entire time. I'm like, why? Five times this year.
For this.
Leave Galileo alone. Hashtag leave Galileo alone. All right, man. Dunkirk, I want to see this movie again.
Yeah, same here.
It has the feeling of a movie that I would have watched in history class that was 50 years old. You know, it already has that. It fits right along. It's so timeless. It fits right along there with The Great Escape and with Apocalypse Now and with Saving Private Ryan, like I mentioned earlier. Those, I mean, those iconic war films. This will be one that we talked about later in the year. I'm sure this is easily probably the front runner for Best Picture at this point. I mean, we're only in July, granted, but I think this is a shoe-in for a lot of big stuff later in the year. I don't know about acting. Actually, I don't think any acting awards will come out of this. Maybe Mark Rylance was very good
Mark
in it.
Rylance. Yeah.
But he's good in everything.
Go ahead, Brian. Gosh. Sorry.
Mark Rylance was incredible. I'm so glad that we get to see him now, because it's like I don't even know how old he is, but he's been working at his craft for so long, and really I don't think I had seen him in a movie until 2015. Bridge of Spies, and he had The Gunman with Sean Penn before that, and then that, what was it, with that Wolf Hall was what he won Emmys for, and now we've got BFG and we've got this, and then he's in Ready Player One next year, and
he's incredible.
Unbelievable. It's amazing what, you know, Hannah, you mentioned Tom Hardy's acting with his eyes is incredible. What Mark Rylance is able to do, he has this, there's a subtlety to everything that he brings to the screen. And so you're getting mannerisms, and you're getting expressions, and you're getting, and it's the way in which he says these things, especially when he's talking to Cillian Murphy. Yeah. It's just like, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. And stepping off the plane, these little quotes that, you know, this script is really short, you know,
50, I think it was only like 70 pages long. So
dialogue is not a big part of it. And I think anybody could step into Mark Rylance's role, anyone of that, you know, age and stature, and it would be fine. But he takes these little lines, like when they're getting off the boat at the end, and one of the soldiers yells something at the pilot and about not doing his job or whatever. And he points at the boat and just says, "They know what you did." And that's such a small, that could be such a throwaway line, but that hit me right in the gut because it was it was so powerful the way in which he brought this very quiet presence to that line. And he does that 5 or 6 or more times throughout
I love the part where they're on the boat and the Spitfire is coming behind mm-hmm. him and the boy says, you know, it's a Spitfire, so that he said you didn't even see it or whatever, and he knew what kind of engine, you know, Rolls Royce mm-hmm. engine. Right. I was like, I want him to be my grandfather. Like I love this man. Yeah, he's so good. And you're right, it's those nuanced things mm-hmm. that he does that it was breathtaking, you know, his performance, absolutely. And that's something real quick I wanted to mention about just acting in general, or I should say really more it's the writing, but the characters, because this is not going to be a film unless it's best supporting actor, because there's really not a main character. I mean, you're in it to win it for everybody, but I mean, I know, you know, there's Finn Whitehead's character, Tommy, he's on the cover and all that, but, and the poster, I should say, but there's really not like a main character and everybody's performance is so good. Can they just not win? I mean, a collective,
best
if
ensemble.
It's not the best
SAG,
picture.
Yeah,
exactly. True. Mm-hmm. True. And I would hope for sure mm-hmm. that yeah. was out. Yeah.
You know, but what's cool about that too is that he is able, your main characters are all relative unknowns and Harry Styles, you know, but throughout the film, he's kind of inserted, it's Tom Hardy, it's Mark Rylance, and it's Kenneth Branagh. And so you insert these people here. Yeah. And Cillian Murphy. And you can kind of rely, you can jump back to those people and give, even if the actors aren't acting off of those people, you can kind of give the audience a moment of like resettling and trying to, and like reestablishing some, the kind of like a face, you know, and a voice, you know, and somebody that you can trust. And that's an important step to having this many unknown characters playing big roles, even if they're not talking a lot or, in some ways they're just reacting to the crazy scenes that they're being put into. But when you can cut back 5 minutes later to Mark Rylance and or to Kenneth Branagh or whoever, I think that gives a little bit, it gives the audience like a sense of comfort, weirdly.
Normalcy.
To know that this is still happening. I would be like, supporting actor is the toughest category every single year. There's always 20 guys that could be up for that award. But this was Mark Rylance. That was that's the best supporting performance I've seen this year by a mile. It's not.
Plus
it's
he's
not
won close. Before. So
yeah, that
helps
too. Sure.
Yeah, like you're in the club of someone that gets nominated for Oscars and they think of you in that way and all that.
Sure.
So he probably will, I would think. Yeah. I thought Branagh was great too. He's so
good. My gosh. Yeah.
Always. Yeah.
He's like so underrated and mm-hmm. as a director and an actor, I think he's such a great talent and, he was awesome. I thought, and the aforementioned Styles, I thought was very good. I thought he did a great job.
Used him very well too. Like, maybe don't throw 4,000 lines at him. You know, we don't want him in an Aaron Sorkin movie just yet. But we can put him in this, and he worked really well.
Yeah, the word I would use for Mark Rylance is he has a certain delicacy to what he does.
That's a great way to put it.
It's
extremely graceful. There you go, as well. And that really struck me in Bridge of Spies, especially that opening scene with him.
Yeah.
And the like, all the little trinkets that he had as a spy. So good. But I'm excited.
My brother still says to me, "Would it help if I'm stressed about something?" He quotes his character from that. Uh-huh. Would it help?
Yeah. Love that guy and excited to see him in the future. I believe Steven Spielberg's working with him again on Ready Player One. And he was a BFG too. You always forget that he was the mm-hmm. BFG.
And if we are losing Daniel Day-Lewis, he's kind of an apt replacement for that mm-hmm. type of great.
It always fascinates me, actors that get famous when they're like 60. You know, it's amazing that I can. I'm going to be one of those guys. You're not going to hear about me acting until I'm 70, and I'm just that old guy that's in that thing. That's really cool.
If you ever have a chance to. if you're into this kind of thing, if you, there's tons of Rylance with the Royal Shakespeare Company, I believe, and all the parts that he did over the years there, which are really fun YouTube things. I mean, he plays, because they do it pretty authentically, so he plays a lot of women, because they do it as the era did it. So, like, it's pretty fun to watch him totally become different things.
Absolutely. Man, very cool. Very cool experience watching this. And I'm sure it won't be the last time we talk about it this year, but we need to talk about the ending. So spoiler alerts coming up right now for Dunkirk. Like I said, I was wondering what was going to happen to Tom Hardy and didn't think that he was going to freaking land his plane on the beach and be basically walk away, you know? Awesome.
Right into the arms of the Germans. Yeah.
My heart was broken. Yeah. Right. That was rough.
I mean, he looks down at his friend pilot or co-pilot guy as he goes down, and basically his co-pilot landed his plane in the ocean, you know, successfully without dying. And he was probably thinking to himself, man, I could do that right now and probably survive this thing, you know. But he stuck it out. And that another tense moment is where he's cranking the freaking landing gear as he's going down.
Oh my gosh.
And he's he's basically, like I said, when the ticking goes out, it's when his plane starts to become a glider, you know, and it's just like,
you're giving
gliding.
Me anxiety all over again, Kent.
It's just gliding over these battles, you know, and he's just this hero and everything. What a cool moment and a triumphant moment. And, one of the better endings to a movie this year, and very, very poignant way to end this thing. But wow, it wasn't really a twist or anything like that, like we're Christopher Nolan's known to do. Not really cliffhanger, but a very appropriate ending, I would say it. And very, you know, this movie ends and you see written and directed by Christopher Nolan, you're like, wow. That's one dude that did that, you know, pretty much. And again, flawlessly executed. Great, great movie. You guys have any other thoughts, closing thoughts? Hannah, anything you noticed on the second time around that maybe stuck out a little bit more, anything like that? Because I'm excited to see it for a second time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you really need to. I mean, it's tough to say. I think you would definitely pick up some new stuff. I mean, I just loved every single minute of this movie. I think it's interesting how short it is. I mean, it's one of Nolan's shortest to date. And you're just, I mean, riveted the entire time. What's that?
Nothing wrong with a short movie, man.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right. No, that's
and it starts a trend.
Yes, I know.
Leave them wanting more.
One thing I was thinking coming out of this was, man, they did not add in any unnecessary anything. You know, it was very like, succinct and I, you know, I think it's interesting. I guess the actors, to me, they do really shine. Nolan used them so well. That was something that I really thought about. Just everything they conveyed was so well done on their part, but because of his direction. But another thing that I just love and I really, a couple things actually. One that I'll mention is the idea that Nolan had for the film, which is a triptych, you know, one of those pictures that's split into three pieces. And that was just such a cool vision. I love the way that he made it so artistic and pulled that off so nicely. So that was just something that stuck out to me. And that's not really like a, you know, plot point or anything like that. It's just more of an overall vision. But one thing that I will say, and really not to get cheesy here, because I'm not too much about the cheese, but I think from a cultural and historical view, something that was made so genuinely well and communicated amazingly was the resilience of the British people.
Yeah.
And it's tangible and it's inspiring. And, and you watch that and it is a bigger, I mean, I'm as an American and as a history nerd and a film nerd, I'm surprised I didn't know more about this event. And not a lot of people that I know don't, you know about Dunkirk and a lot about that. So plus it happened so early on in the war. Yeah. But just incredible. I mean, you walk out just feeling like, what kind of person am I going to be based on this film that I've seen? I mean, like, yeah. And I don't know. It's that was just something for me that really it made an impact, man. This movie sticks with you when you you leave theater. So, there's not too much else for me to say but that.
The sequence when the British civilians come over in their boats, and I think it's Kenneth Branagh is like looking out at the ocean and sees them rolling in. That's such an organic sense of like, man, sometimes nice good things happen, you know, like it's just like it hit me hard. Just like what these people are doing right now is truly inspiring and heroic. And that scene was perfect and perfectly well shot. And that I think it very easily could have been really cheesy or just, okay, we get it, you know, but instead I think it found exactly the right tone that you need. That's one of the best. I think that's one of the best sequences of the movie, which is saying a lot.
Backed by the score, also it hits a major key, and you're just like, it swells, and you're like, okay, wow, like I'm gonna be okay, and they're gonna be okay,
yeah,
and everybody's gonna be okay. And it's interesting, actually. I just remembered, this was the second time around watching the film, and again, we're in spoiler territory, so this doesn't matter. But when they show, this is in one of the sequences, when they show Ferrier, which is Tom Hardy's character, push up on the throttle, I guess, and he's headed to, you know, finally end things, I guess. And that, the moment in that part, the score hits a major note, and it alludes to the where when he flies over everyone, and it's everybody cheering and everything. So that was interesting, because that doesn't happen until that very moment. And then you realize that it's later, you know, the whole 1 hour, 1 week, one day thing that Nolan does. But yeah, it's actually happens in the movie. And so it's almost like it alludes to like, there's some hope, and then, you know, cuts back to scenes of utter destruction, but ends so well. Yeah.
Yeah. And the moment where Branagh basically stays behind, you know, to wait on the French or the French troops or people or whatever. Was also man, these people. The thing about this is a great movie, you know, in the way it tells a story. But this all freaking happened, you know. That's what you think about. Mm-hmm. Like this, you know, our grandparents, ancestors did this, and I mean, there's just you're stunned every time you see a movie about the Great War or about World War One or Vietnam, because it's insane that it ever happened, and there's just hundreds, if not thousands, of stories like Dunkirk, you know, in, you know, by the day in these things. And I'm just glad Christopher Nolan could do this in the respectable way that he did, and, you know, bring an air of creativity to it all and his own style. And I'm just pretty floored in the end. So let's hit a grade here for this. I'm going to give this a freaking A+. Loved it. Loved the color schemes of it all. The green, you know, it's basically green and blue for the entire movie. I love the old school planes too. Those look awesome. I love old planes for some reason. I'm just really fascinated by old school, you know, propeller powered planes and fighters, you know, like what Harrison Ford was flying when he crashed into a golf course. It's pretty much the same thing. He basically pulled a Tom Hardy and landed that son of a gun on a golf course, which is still awesome. So American treasure of him to do that. But this was incredible. So A+ from me. Hannah.
You know what, Ken? It can be nothing but an A+ for me as well. It was kind of like right out the gate, I was like, oh, I know what this grade is going to be. One for the books. I think it's just flawless, and I have zero qualms and zero complaints, and I will be watching this movie for the rest of my life.
Oh, I can't wait.
Pretty
wow.
Much.
I might actually upgrade to the 4K TV for this one. I'm not even kidding.
5K, man. I'm going all in.
Yeah. Brian and Richard, grades?
Yeah, A+ for me too, dude. I loved it. This is I love the narrative structure. I know that was a holdback for some people that saw it this weekend, but I thought that added, I didn't expect that, and it added an element to the movie that I think took it from like a man, this should be a really good movie, to like, wow, this is incredible filmmaking on top of being a really good movie and a cool story. And I like too that it didn't, that he was able to tell a real story without focusing so much on real people. Does that make sense? Like to just be able to like, the focus of this movie should be Dunkirk and the history of what actually happened here, not necessarily some private or some fisherman or something like that. And I thought that was a really cool thing. And two, the last thing I'll say too is I thought it was a great choice to never once show the Germans. I thought that was an awesome.
Yes, that was something I noticed too. It was very vague and just alludes to the enemy and like this whole thing. Yeah,
I love it. I think that leaves you with a sense of kind of like the foreboding doom of like what's out there, and you never get a chance to see the Germans in this movie. It works really well to never see them as people. You just see them as like this force that's out there coming for you. And it's kind of like Jaws, you know. I thought that was brilliant. That was a really good choice.
I guess the plane or the bomber or whatever, but that's,
you never see it. Yeah, exactly. You never see a
swastika flown around or anything like that.
Well, I can tell you it's also a very British choice, as someone who comes from a lot of Anglo-Saxon background here. You know, we don't acknowledge or suppress things, just suppress or don't acknowledge things, and then they just disappear. That's how these these things work. So if you just don't mention the Nazis, they don't exist, and this is all just sort of happening, and you'll get through it. That's the kind of British way. I'm gonna go A+ as well. Maybe my favorite movie of the year so far. One of those, not a surprise though. So it's like, the feeling of euphoria is really the feeling of surprise, but this kind of provided its own euphoria, even though it lacked in surprise. So yeah, I'm gonna go A+ as well.
It's been a great summer, guys.
Yeah,
really, it has. Oh, totally. Awesome. Ken, your tweet, I guess it was, I don't remember when the tweet was, but yeah, you said like, I hope that we can see more movies, you know, like Baby Driver and like Dunkirk. I mean, it's truly a great summer. I'm very surprised how things have been going.
If not just money wise, I mean, I think the money's doing pretty well. You know, it goes down a little bit some years, but if you look at the, I don't think I sent this to you guys the other day, the top 10 movies in the country right now are Dunkirk, which is at 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. Girls Trip is 88. Spider-Man Homecoming is 92. Planet of the Apes is 94. Valerian is 54. Despicable Me 61. So those are both mediocre to bad. Baby Driver 94, The Big Sick 98, Wonder Woman 92, then something called Wish Upon, which is 21%. So I mean, that's like an average, especially in the top five, of like 85% on Rotten Tomatoes for the top five movies in the country. That's, to me, insane.
I
mean, this has been, we talked about it on the show, this has been a good year for movies. There have been a lot of great movies this year, you know. I go back to, you know,
Seven.
I mean, there's been some solid ones, like, you know, John Wick 2 was solid, Kong was pretty solid, Life was pretty solid, Fate of the Furious, I count Spider-Man Homecoming in that, I count War for the Planet of the Apes in that, I think those were very, you know, Wonder Woman, I think those are good, if not great movies, but the ones I mentioned, Get Out, Baby Driver.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't see that still, Get Out.
The ones I mentioned, Get Out, Baby Driver, and Dunkirk, I mean, they're like all-timers good. I mean, they're like, we'll be talking about those in 10 years, you know, like in 2007, 10 years ago, we still talk about, you know, No Country for Old Men and so many movies back from that time that it was such a, you know, such a strong year with There Will Be Blood and others from that year that, I just think this is a unusually strong year for movies in general. You know, just the generic movies have been better. The blockbusters, the comedies, all that have been better. You know, I didn't even mention Guardians of the Galaxy, which is one of the highest grossing movies of the year. Very solid too. You know,
but I just think critical reception about Spider-Man, you know, and everybody loves that movie. Everybody in front of me in line for Dunkirk was seeing Spider-Man. I was just like, okay, wow. You know.
The average movie has been much better this year, but the great movies have been great movies. And I mean, this is a a sense of what's to come for Oscar season. We're in for a really, really good year to round it out with Star Wars and, you know, Murder on the Orient Express and so many others that are coming out later this year that are very hyped and all that. I'm very, very anxious, but this just adds to the list of wow factor that 2017 has been. You know, I've been let down, I don't know, four times in the theater that I can remember. King Arthur was let down, you know, The Circle, Baywatch and The Mummy. That's it. That's four movies that I'm like,
Transformers.
Transformers. I don't count that. That doesn't count. Pirates was fine, you know, it wasn't like a viscerally bad or anything like that. It was just there. So it's been an above average year, and I'm excited to round it out. But speaking of round it out, let's round out this episode with a weekly recommend. How about that? Okay. Awesome.
Look at that.
Weekly recommend.
Hannah, we will give you again the first word in weekly recommends.
Why, thank you. So a couple episodes ago, or maybe it was last episode or whatever, and this was in preparation for this ep, and I was trying to figure out what my weekly recommend would be, and Ken, you recommended a few different albums, and so I felt like I had permission, you know, to recommend a few different albums. This music, like I've mentioned before, is really huge for me, and I wanted to recommend a couple albums. So the first of which is going to be, I'm a massive Ray LaMontagne fan, just have been forever, and he's probably the GOAT in my opinion. He's like my go-to number one guy, and he released a record last year called Ouroboros, and I think it's his sixth studio album, and it's phenomenal. It's just really good. It's kind of a bit progressive, especially for him, but it's definitely heavy in the progressive category. Nods to Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, which is one of my all-time favorite records. Silent recommend there. But so that is a fantastic album. And it's cool because I don't know if anybody listening or anybody here is a My Morning Jacket fan, but Jim James, the frontman of My Morning Jacket, actually, he produced the record. And so they recorded it at, funny enough, La La Land Studios in Louisville, Kentucky. So that's a cool recommend. And the second following would have to be actually My Morning Jacket's album called The Waterfall. I've just been playing it nonstop. And both of these came out last year and then 2015. So they're not new, but they're not new to me. But I've been just playing them nonstop lately. They're really good summer vinyls to throw on and stuff like that. So definitely music just always, but those two in particular are standing out to me right now.
That's right up my alley. I saw Roger Waters last week, actually.
Oh my gosh.
His Us and Them tour that he's on right now. And it was unbelievable. Hannah, I think he did the first half of Dark Side of the Moon, like in his first, you know, right to come out. And he did stuff from The Wall, of course. He did stuff from Animals, was kind of the, he has an intermission there. And the second half was basically Animals. And, you know, it's the Animal Farm album that they did. And it's a lot about, you know, they had a lot of very political imagery in it and everything. Wow. And it was an incredible
experience. I didn't
even
know he was touring.
Yeah,
I work on a farm. So that, you know, should be explanation enough for why I kind of live under a rock. But mm-hmm. basically that's really unfair. It's
yeah,
kind of hate
it was,
you now a little bit.
It
so.
Was great. Sorry. That's all. Those are good recommends. I love The Waterfall too, and I like.
Oh yeah, solid.
Ray
Nobody talks
well.
About it. Nobody yeah. talks about it. I've told so many of my friends to listen to it, and some of them do, and you know,
yeah,
they like it or whatever. But they're yeah. not as high on it as I am. So
good recommends.
So yeah,
good stuff. We love music
Thank
on
you.
The show. I got a side recommend.
Yes, I'm so glad.
I gotta recommend.
Actually, I'm pretty anti-music.
He is.
Too bad, Richard. Too bad.
My recommend is kind of out of the box too. I'm gonna recommend an app this week. It's available for iPhone, iPad. I'm not sure about Android. I apologize. Actually, I don't apologize. I don't apologize for that. It is it's a money app called I can recommend Tinder, of course. Yes, I can. It's a money app called Clarity Money, and this helped me out because I was always wondering, you know, how many things I was still getting charged for that I signed up for like 4 years ago that I forgot about, you know, like a $4 every 6 months kind of thing, or, you know, an old on-demand app that I bought that I forgot about, and it's charging me, what, $4 a month or something. It's too little to even notice. There's an app that you sign in with your bank account, and it basically runs a scan on all your credit cards, all that stuff. And it's totally secure. It's backed by the banks or whatever, but it's just a great app for keeping track of finances, bills. Again, things
out of Ken's garage.
What? Out of my garage? I'm sorry.
For information.
Sorry, you broke up there. I didn't make that out. Really good app for managing kind of your day-to-day finances and bills and all that stuff. So really good interface, and I can recommend it. Clarity app on the iPhone. You'll thank me later. It's kept me on my my P's and Q's when it comes to my check balancing my checkbook and all that good stuff. So Clarity is available now. iPhone, check it out. Brian, what's your recommend?
I'm going to recommend a show that's on Netflix that I have recommended in the past, but we didn't have half the viewers or listeners, excuse me, we do now. So just want to make sure everybody knows this is out there. And the new, its fourth season is headed our way in about 6 weeks, I believe. So you want to have time to check it out. If you haven't watched BoJack Horseman on Netflix, I highly recommend it. One of the funniest shows out there, and pushing the envelope of what you can do with both a sitcom and an animated feature. It's got Will Arnett voices a talking horse who was a sitcom star in the 80s and is now a super washed up guy, and his pursuit of trying to like regain his level of fame, and has some of the funniest jokes that I've ever heard. It's like, it's not quite as joke on joke on joke as Arrested Development or 30 Rock or something like that, but it's in that kind of vein of humor, I think. So if you're a fan of those shows or even Family Guy or Simpsons to a degree, I think you'll appreciate it. And it's worth it, if for no other reason than Sinnott, who's probably my favorite character on TV right now. So check that out if you haven't already. And I think the first season's like early September. So you've got plenty of time. It's 3 seasons, 30 episodes. You've got plenty of time to get that in before the new season gets here.
Awesome. Well, BoJack. Richard.
I'm going to recommend a band that the three of us went to see this weekend. And actually, Kent and I went to high school with a member of it. But it's a really good, they're on all your streaming services, a good Americana band called the Quaker City Nighthawks. And we saw them live, the three of us, which was rare that we were in each other's presence last week. And it was a really good show all the way through. Big shout out to the Granada Theater for hosting a fun week of shows. Quaker City Nighthawks, great, great little, you know, rock and roll country blues band if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah,
that was great.
They're really great.
I came out, guys. We did stuff together. We never get to do that. It was fun.
Yeah. It was good stuff. Really good albums. They have one called Honcho. That's great. El Astronaut is the new one, I think. And that's Spanish for the astronaut. And they actually told us that at the show. I did not know that, but they told us that it was did in fact mean the
that's
astronaut.
That's kind of stuff you see when you go live. You
know? They're awesome, man. They're just old school blues rock, southern rock. Really good vocals and they just rock. So love those guys. Quaker City Nighthawks, good recommend. Well, Hannah, this has been awesome. You had tons of great insight, and you're welcome back anytime, of course. But this has been a really good conversation, and honestly, I wish we could talk Dunkirk for 2.5 more hours.
Same thing. It's been such a pleasure, and I'm just over the moon to be able to be on the pod. So thanks for having me on, and I look forward to future episodes with y'all.
Thank you for being on. Well, in the meantime, if we wanted to find you online, where would we do that?
Well, I am on social media at Hannah in HD. That is like high definition.
It's the only way to really see Hannah is in HD.
Yeah. 4K. I should 4K, change it to 4K.
Yeah, 4K.
Which, yeah, that's been my tag forever. But that is me, Hannah in HD. A lot of people don't know what it says, and I have to explain it, so I'm explaining it. And then, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter. I'm not that exciting on social media, but yeah, feel free to follow. And I do occasionally write, but that's not really something that would be on anything but Instagram, I guess. So check it out there.
Cool. Brian, where can we find you?
You can find me on the Twitter at BGill12. You can find my writing at madaboutmoviespodcast.com and the Mad About Movies Podcast newsletter, which may be out next week. So check that out. Richard, where can we find you?
You can find me on all social media at Richard Barty. You can find me at the Mad About Movies Podcast newsletter. All that good stuff. Kent, I'm looking for you, buddy. Where can I find you?
Online at Kent Garrison on Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat, and KentGarrison.com. You can find us also, madaboutmoviespodcast.com. Join the VIP club there, and all our shows are archived there as well. For your listening pleasure, we really appreciate the support. Subscribe on iTunes, leave us 5 stars. That helps a lot. And until next time, we'll be talking either Valerian or Big Sick or something like that. it's a very vast difference in the two, but we'll see.
Thinking about Valerian makes me sick. So that's good. The funny, you
it's
know.
Perfect. Yeah. Heyo.
It should make for a great hour of audio. Yep. Until then, we will see you at the cinema. Goodbye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. They're making me ya ya. The salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again.